This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Unless we die in a sudden accident, crime, or act of war, most of us will face a serious illness at some point in our lives. We will have to cope somehow with a shorter or longer period of physical diminishment, pain, and uncertainty, writes Musa Mayer. Mayer was diagnosed with breast cancer in 1989, and ever since finishing her treatment, she's worked as an advocate for breast cancer patients. She's served as a patient consultant to the Food and Drug Administration's Cancer Drug Development Program, and has led many workshops for people with life-threatening illnesses, their families, and caregivers. She's also written a memoir about breast cancer, as well as two guidebooks, After Breast Cancer and Advanced Breast Cancer, A Guide to Living with Metastatic Disease. Her first book, published just before her diagnosis, was a memoir about her late father, the artist Philip Guston.
Would you describe what your surgery and therapy were after you were diagnosed with breast cancer in 1989?
I was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer, a pretty large tumor, and fortunately had no lymph nodes involved. In other words, the cancer had not yet begun to spread to other parts of my body. I chose to have a mastectomy, and I had implant reconstruction. And I had what was at that time a reasonably aggressive form of chemotherapy. I had 12 cycles of CMF, that's Cytoxan, Methotrexate, and 5-FU.
So you had for what at the time was a very aggressive form of treatment, the mastectomy and the relatively high-dose chemo. How does that compare with what you think you would have been prescribed if you were diagnosed with the same tumor today?
I think I would have been much more likely to have had a lumpectomy with radiation today, although that choice was really mine. And I think that I would have been given Adriamycin and Cytoxan were I to be diagnosed today.
Are they?
And probably in a dose-dense form, in other words, every 2 weeks with growth factor support, which helps the bone marrow to recover between treatments.
So would it have been easier for you to recover from the actual treatments if you were going through it today?
Oh, absolutely. What's really changed most significantly since then is the support. There are much better drugs to deal with some of the side effects like nausea and vomiting than there were at the time that I was treated. I was really more frightened of the chemo at the time than I was of the cancer itself.
Well, that's probably true of a lot of women, and as you point out in the book, in the short term, it's the treatment for breast cancer that's much more debilitating than the cancer itself, in the short term.
That's how many women feel, and in fact, for most women, they will never actually have a symptom related to the cancer itself, apart from perhaps feeling it in their breast or seeing it on a mammogram. They will never experience pain or any other symptom. The difficulties that they may experience, and as I said, they're much less now than they were, really have to do with the toxicities of the treatment.
Can you say with confidence, having done all the research that you have and having lived through it yourself, can you say with confidence to someone who is just diagnosed with breast cancer, the chemotherapy is difficult to endure, but it works much of the time. It is worth doing this.
Well, we are learning that it's not quite that simple, that it really depends on what kind of cancer you have. Breast cancer is a diverse disease. As far as we know, there are at least 5 different kinds of breast cancers. When you look at the genetic structure of the cancer itself, and not all of them respond to chemotherapy. In fact, for the majority of women with small tumors who are diagnosed at stage 1 or early stage 2, hormonal treatment offers much more advantage for her.
What's hormonal treatment?
Well, I say hormonal because we are in a time of transition. Hormonal treatment used to be tamoxifen. This was the drug that was offered to women routinely at the time that I was diagnosed. It's an older drug, and it actually prevents the estrogen receptors on the surface of the cancer cell from taking in estrogen in the body. So it can be used for women who are premenopausal and postmenopausal. Since I was diagnosed in the 90s, we've seen the approval of three drugs which are called aromatase inhibitors, and they work by actually in postmenopausal women for whom the ovaries are no longer a source of estrogen. These drugs work by preventing the conversion of androgens, that is male hormones, in the body and in the breast into estrogen by inhibiting an enzyme called aromatase, hence they're called aromatase inhibitors. And these have been shown to be more effective than tamoxifen, and so they are now, as of just this last year, recommended as hormonal treatment for postmenopausal women with estrogen receptor or progesterone receptor positive breast cancers.
Well, getting back to what you were saying there were a couple of types of cancer that respond best to these estrogen inhibitors, these hormonal inhibitors. What about the other forms of cancer? How confident are doctors now that chemo works?
Well, at the time that I was diagnosed, it wasn't really certain if chemo cured patients or if it simply delayed recurrence. But today we know that a certain percent of patients will actually be cured. And there are some very, by having chemo, and there are some very good research on this and some good tools online that can help doctors and patients actually predict the benefit of chemotherapy. And there is a new test that actually is a genomic test which looks at about 16 genes in a woman's tumor and can, on that basis, predict whether or not she will have a recurrence down the line at about 10 years. And there is some indication, there's some pretty good research coming out, though it hasn't been yet confirmed, that this test can actually help to predict whether or not her tumor will respond to chemotherapy in addition to hormonal treatment. It's only available for women with early breast cancers that are node negative, in other words, the cancer hasn't begun to spread to the lymph nodes, and whose tumors are estrogen receptor positive. But one thing that is clear, and is the reason I mentioned this genomic test, is that we're probably treating 3/4 of the women who are diagnosed with early breast cancer unnecessarily. In other words, they are really cured by their surgery and radiation. It's just that we haven't known who actually needs the so-called adjuvant chemotherapy.
But you think that we're getting closer to being able to figure out who needs it and who doesn't?
Absolutely. I think we're going to see big progress in that area, in the area of individualizing therapy for primary breast cancer, and hopefully for women with advanced breast cancers too, actually being able to predict response to given drugs.
When you were diagnosed with breast cancer back in 1989, you were faced with choices. And as you say in your memoir about breast cancer, choice should be empowering, but it wasn't empowering, at least not initially, to be given these choices. It was baffling, it was frightening, it was kind of paralyzing. What was the problem?
Well, the problem is that you're being asked to decide on something without, at a time of great emotional stress, that is when you're newly diagnosed with a disease, without having all the necessary information. this is what women face every day with a new diagnosis. And choices are only empowering when you have the time to learn and reflect and consider the implications of the choices you're making. Now we know that it's perfectly safe in almost all cases to wait for a couple of weeks to really get a number of second opinions, to study what is known about the various treatment options, and to take your time and choose carefully. To decide, for example, on what kind of chemotherapy or whether or not you'll have chemotherapy at the same time that you're trying to make a decision about breast reconstruction, for example, if should you elect mastectomy, that's a little overwhelming. That's a lot to be thinking about at the same time.
Speaking of breast reconstruction, you had that done, didn't you?
I did. I had an implant, a breast implant. Implant surgery can be satisfactory for me, though I have to say, had I known what it felt like to have an implant, I think that I would have been less likely to choose it.
Why?
I think, well, it's a stranger in my body. You know, it's a part of my body that it has no sensation to me. And it never really occurred to me that I could be flat and be, since I had this option offered to me by the surgeon who did my biopsy, who said I can work alongside with a great plastic surgeon and helped me make an appointment with him. And I just really didn't seriously consider going without. And that's the disadvantage, if you will, of having an immediate reconstruction. I think it helped me psychologically to feel that I was having something put there, although it doesn't replace what is taken away. But I'm not sure I would make the same choice again. I think these days the majority of women in most situations really can have lumpectomy with radiation, so they're not really facing that reconstruction decision for the most part. And, you know, I have many friends who've had bilateral mastectomies and happily go flat, altogether flat. And you know, of course, they wish they had kept their breasts, but that's certainly another alternative that never occurred to me at the time.
You were in a breast cancer group after your surgery and chemo. This was a group for women who, like you, had treated breast cancer. Did that help you, do you think?
I think it did help me a great deal. And in fact, I'm still very close to the women in that group. We still meet every couple of months, and we don't talk much about breast cancer anymore, although even all these years later, one of the members of our group has just had another primary breast cancer, so has just gone through another whole set of surgery and chemotherapy and so on. So in a way, it's always with us. But the group has always been very important to me, and that still sustains me and motivates my work today.
Years ago, earlier in the history of this group of women who had breast cancer and were treated for it, a couple of the women in the group, their cancer metastasized.
Yes.
And you write in one of your books about how this kind of created this uncomfortable, unspoken barrier between the women who were hoping that the breast cancer was really behind them and those for whom it had metastasized. Can you describe that gap, like what that meant to the women in the group?
Well, it's the gap falls both ways. It's hard for the women who live in fear of recurrence but have not experienced it to hear what it's like for the women who have had a recurrence. And it's also hard for the women who are living with metastatic disease to feel like, to feel comfortable sharing their stories, because they're very aware of how frightening their experience is for women with primary breast cancer. I've been in groups that are mixed, that is both early and metastatic breast cancers, and I've been in groups that are segregated, shall we say, where just metastatic breast cancer patients share with one another about their disease. And I see that they are much freer in talking about what it's really like when they don't have to be concerned for their sisters who have not had that experience. It's very natural for women to, when they're in a group like this together, to compare themselves with one another. So if you have a recurrence, and we've been seeing each other all the time for the last few years, and we feel like sisters in this experience, then that's going to make me worry about, even more about, gee, maybe I'll be having a recurrence too. It's just very scary and threatening.
Since you work with so many women who have metastatic breast cancer and who are facing not only their own mortality, but a lot of discomfort and pain and weakness and depression. I'm wondering about what you've seen women do to give their lives a sense of meaning and to come to peace with the sense of the brevity of life. You know, so many people turn to religion or find that their faith is deepened when they're really facing their own mortality. But not everyone has faith, or not everyone finds faith, even when facing mortality, even in the face of pain. For those women who don't have and haven't found faith, what are some of the things that you've seen them turn to?
It's very common for the women that I'm in touch with to go on disability so that they can spend more time with their families, more time doing the things that are important to them. Making memories is a theme that comes up over and over again, that they want to focus on sharing experiences with the people they care most about, and they find a deep sense of meaning in that and a sense of legacy. But I want to say that the majority of women with metastatic breast cancer that I'm in touch with are actually doing very well physically. They may even still be working full-time and living lives that to the outside observer would seem very normal. I think the perception is often that having metastatic cancer of any kind is sort of an immediate death sentence. But in breast cancer, for many women, not for all, but for many women, there are years of very good quality life. There are years of being on hormonal treatments that keep the cancer stabilized, where they can do anything and everything that that normal women do. They ski, they travel, they work full time, they take care of their families. And yet they live with this sense of stigma because other people find their situation so fear inducing.
You know, I know somebody who had breast cancer and I think didn't talk about it a lot when she had it, but after she felt it was behind her, she was very proud of having gotten through it, you know, would refer to herself as proudly as a survivor. She ended up taking her life several years later as a result of depression. And, you know, I thought about her a lot reading your books and just thought a lot about how our sense of life and the meaning of life sometimes has less to do with the disease that we're facing than just the things that wire us for mood.
It's true. I mean, I suppose that's one reason why I feel it's been so important for me. I wouldn't prescribe this for anyone else, but to go and really explore some of the darker places, because I think they're there anyway. Most women who go through a breast cancer experience touch some pretty scary dark places in themselves. And if in their lives they haven't confronted their mortality before, the opportunity is there. And it can be a time of sort of deep personal reflection. I want to say that this can be a benefit and that many women end up feeling in some way, in some strange way, grateful for having been through that. And perhaps the unacknowledged dark parts can emerge as depression. Sometimes depression is a biochemical disorder that may be untreated. I don't know. I can't comment on what your friend went through, but I embraced the experience. You know, I used my diagnosis and my recovery and my contact with other women with breast cancer as a way of opening up to my life. And I'm not suggesting that everybody diagnosed with breast cancer do that by any means. But it's one of those times in your life when you really do have an opportunity to stop and figure out what means something to you and what you want to do with the rest of your life, however long that may be.
I want to read the opening paragraph of your book, Examining Myself, which is your memoir about having breast cancer. This is a paragraph about insomnia. You write, "Every restless night contains a point beyond which the notion of sleep becomes a charade and ceases to be a real possibility. Yet how hard to surrender, to admit defeat. Better to lie there grimly, hour after hour, accruing the insomniac's nightly investment in futility, the countless shifts of position, the repeated untangling of bedclothes and punching of pillows, all the long, intricate trains of thought leading nowhere." A beautiful description of insomnia. You talked before about the importance of, like, really thinking about the dark things, which is typically what a lot of people think about when they're in bed, unable to sleep. Do you still have insomnia? It's been years since you wrote that memoir.
Actually, I rarely lose a night's sleep anymore. I'm happy to say. I guess I've become a lot more resilient in that way. But at that time, not knowing what lay ahead of me and trying frantically to master breast cancer as if it were a sort of academic course, and feeling so out of control, I think my mind was just laboring to somehow understand or comprehend on some level what had happened to me. I was sleeping again pretty regularly within a month or so of that time that I wrote about. And the process of writing, for a long time I was doing writing workshops for breast cancer survivors, because the actual process of writing my way through that experience had been so important to my recovery that I became persuaded that that would that could help others too.
How did it help?
Just giving words to experience that is overwhelming, just being able to distance oneself a bit from that those momentous changes in one's life, and to make a narrative out of it. I think human beings are natural storytellers to themselves and to others, and there's something about the very process of making a story out of it. I discovered that when I was working on the memoir that I wrote about my father and about growing up. And I eventually was able to apply that to breast cancer and to help other people do that too. And in my experiences online, in various internet communities where people tell their stories. I saw that and I see that today happening constantly, that people are able to find a measure of equilibrium and distance from the overwhelming events of their lives through writing.
Well, Musa Mayer, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Terry. Thank you.
Musa Mayer's books include Advanced Breast Cancer and After Breast Cancer. You can find more information at her website, www.advancedbc.org. That's www.advancedbc.org.